back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last Monday, a fire at the Chevron Richmond refinery spewed a thick plume of black smoke over the city and the surrounding areas. The fire prompted county health officials to issue a shelter-in-place warning. Stay in your home. More than 5,700 people went to local hospitals complaining of breathing problems as of Friday, according to the Contra Costa Times. The following day last week, at a town hall meeting held by Chevron, community members voiced their anger about the environmental and health hazards involved in living so close to the refineries. Eduardo Martinez, a candidate for Richmond City Council, said that this incident shows that Chevron needs to change its ways because it's causing harm to the community. He said, quote, "The Chevron fire reminds us that we're living next to an environmental time bomb," end quote. The Associated Press reports that investigators with the U.S. Chemical Safety Board believe the fire was caused by a failing pipe. Investigators said more than a dozen workers were nearly killed as they worked on a leaky four-decades-old pipe that the oil giant had not replaced during a round of maintenance last year. The team of U.S. Chemical Safety Board investigators painted a frightening picture of the seconds after the pipe released a 600-degree gas oil liquid that created a highly flammable vapor cloud that quickly engulfed Chevron employees who were examining the pipe. They said it was rare for so many employees to be in harm's way. David Baker, staff writer with the San Francisco Chronicle, reports that Chevron's refinery has been processing crude oil since 1902, 3 years before Richmond incorporated as a city. Today, the refinery is capable of processing 257,000 barrels of crude per day, about 20% of Northern California's gasoline. Together with a technology research center at the refinery site, Chevron employs about 2,700 people, about 7% of whom live in the city. Chevron is Richmond's largest employer. It's also the 10th largest polluter in the state, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about what we need to know about this fire, what we need to know about Chevron, and what does this latest incident mean for the future of the company and their relationship with the community. Today we are joined by David Baker. He's a staff writer at the San Francisco Chronicle, where he covers energy issues. He and his colleagues Carolyn Jones and Will Kane wrote a lengthy piece about Chevron's tense relationship with Richmond in yesterday's Chronicle. And David joins us from his office in San Francisco. Hi, David. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Antonia Yuhas. She's author of The Tyranny of Oil, The World's Most Powerful Industry and What We Must Do to Stop It. Antonia is editor and lead author of three alternative annual reports for Chevron called The True Cost of Chevron. She is former director of the Chevron program at Global Exchange, and she joins us here in studio. Hi, Antonia. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And also in studio is Tanya Polito. She's an activist and Richmond resident. Tanya runs the Berryland Community Garden in Richmond, and she's also been involved in issues impacting the health of her community, including a campaign against Chevron. Hi, Tanya. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Great to see you. So, David, let's start with you. What are the official reports tell us so far about what exactly happened?
Not terribly much. I mean, there's still pretty huge gaps, but basically, as near as we can tell, this was the sequence of events. Somewhere around 4:15 p.m. last Monday, the company noticed a small leak going on a pipe that splits off from the crude unit. That's sort of the heart of the refinery, where crude oil is first separated down into different components that can be made into different products. So somewhere around 4:15 p.m., they noticed that there was a little bit of a leak coming from one of the pipes that comes off to the side of that. And so they mobilized their team to go out and take a look at it. And while they were out there, they were sort of debating what to do. And at one point, they started stripping away the insulation from the pipe. And once they did, that sort of released a whole bunch more of this hydrocarbon that's basically a predecessor to diesel. It's the stuff that will be turned into diesel a little bit farther in the refinery. There was a sudden release of this in a form of a vapor. The people who were there, I think it was about 20 or so of them, realized this was very bad. They scrambled to get out of there, and just after they got out of there, this thing ignited. It created this huge fire. destroyed one of their fire trucks, too, and did so far an unknown amount of damage to the refinery. It's going to be serious damage. We just don't know how serious.
What can you tell us about the group that's in charge of the investigation, the U.S. Chemical Safety Board?
There's actually multiple government agencies that are investigating at the same time. The Chemical Safety Board, they're an independent group. They basically just mobilized to look at large chemical accidents. They're sort of like the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, is for airline accidents, except they actually have a bit more independence even than that. The people I know in the oil industry respect them, respect their skills and their investigations, and say they're pretty much straight shooters.
Antonia, you wanted to jump in on that question?
I mean, I would absolutely just second what David just said. The U.S. Chemical Safety Board is an excellent investigative unit, and what's very important about them and their findings initially is that they've highlighted the fact that this was a corroded pipe that was already identified as a problem in November, as David said. They've been highly critical of the fact that the pipe was already identified as a problem, and this really should have raised many red flags at Chevron, because this is the third time since 1999 that an old corroded pipe that is decades old led to a major refinery incident, first in 1999, then in 2007. Now it appears again this time around. But also the U.S. Chemical Safety Board is important because in 2007, they did an investigation of the BP Texas City refinery incident that led to the deaths of 15 workers. And they said this is a result of cost-cutting, this is a result of a lack of attention to health and safety at our refineries, but this is not a problem isolated to BP. This is refinery-wide across the industry, across the companies. Just last month in hearings, they reiterated this exact same problem, and they said, we have not seen any advance in the safety at U.S. refineries since 2007, even though there have been scores of deaths in between, and they warned that this is still a problem just last month. And then here they are again saying, you know, look, you know, they aren't saying this, I'm saying this. This is the wealthiest industry literally the world has ever known. Mm. And they're operating decrepit refineries. And the reason why they're doing it, one reason, in addition to the fact that we allow them, is that when the Clean Air Act was passed and amendments were then passed to it in 1976, U.S. oil refiners were required to use the cleanest, safest, best technology at refineries. But the little catch that the oil industry got was they could grandfather in their existing refineries. So what that means is that there has not been a single new refinery built since 1976 in the United States, and that the companies have been getting by with patchwork work done to the existing refineries, the majority of which are 50, 75, 100 years old. And look at the result, 20, 30, 40-year-old pipes dripping, exploding, and threatening the lives of workers and certainly harming the health of community members.
Have any oil company, have they been held responsible for old pipes when something happens?
Sure. I mean, they do get held responsible. But the reality is that, you know, this is one of the worst refinery incidents in probably the last couple years. But according to United Steelworkers, which represents oil workers at refineries, there's about a fire a week at a refinery in the United States. And what they said to me is any fire at an oil refinery is a serious fire. Just in April, you know, in California, there was a major fire at a ConocoPhillips refinery in Los Angeles. There are major incidents at this refinery, which, of course, mm-hmm. Tanya and David can speak to in Richmond, you know, regularly. What most often happens is late imposed fines that are imposed after public pressure. We don't have a nearly sufficient regulatory system. We don't have a nearly sufficient system that stops incidents before they happen. What we more frequently have is after the fact, through community pressure, fines get levied.
Mm-hmm. And Tanya, you live in Richmond. What was your reaction when you first heard about the fire?
Well, I heard the sirens go on, and I was in the backyard of someone's backyard in Richmond, and they live like slightly up a hill, and we were having a discussion, and I heard the siren, and I started panicking, and I was like, it's not Wednesday, and I started looking at them like, it's not Wednesday, it's Monday, and the sirens are going on. There's something wrong, right? And then everyone looked at me. And as soon as we looked at the backyard, there, we just saw this giant, giant, like, cloud of smoke just going over the city. And instantly, I start thinking about all my little cousins, my friends, my family. And it was just a mixed basket of emotions that were going on. I was mad, but I was sad. And I was, like, trying to figure out what direction I wanted to go in. But I started calling people, and there were, one person after another was like, you know, the giant cloud is right over my house and I can't see the sky. And you know, and some people that I know just left, you know, because although they were saying that to go inside, and you know, after a while they say, oh, it's fine, the levels of air quality are normal, you know, even regardless of that, people knew that that wasn't true. And although we didn't have any facts to prove that wasn't true, people just knew, and they just, some people left.
What usually happens on Wednesdays to hear sirens?
Every first Wednesday of the month, sirens go on just as a test.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if you don't hear, if you hear any other day but Wednesday, the first Wednesday of the month, that means something went wrong.
Well, and residents have cause for concern because, David, as you reported in your piece yesterday, the respiratory illness strikes nearly one in three Richmond children, according to a 2011 Kaiser Family Foundation study. So there's a very high asthma rate in the community.
There is, although the people who've looked at asthma there have also noted that there's a pretty high prevalence of smoking in the community, too. So you can't completely just say, oh, it's this one source out there. But, yeah, it's they've had a much higher rate than normal for a long time, too. That study is the latest one that I know of that had hard statistics on it.
And, Tanya, talk a little bit about how the community is reacting to this. What sort of venue is available for the community? So far, there have been how many community meetings, and do you think that those are effective?
No, there was one town hall meeting on Tuesday, and that's the last one I heard of that was actually held by the refinery. And that one was just, it was just awful. It was those essentially hundreds of people trying to get the attention of four panelists, and there were, and then they had Q&A, but they didn't even get to answer everyone's questions. And you know, in the beginning of the meeting, the Richmond Community Foundation was facilitating the panel and the audience, and you know, she was saying, we're gonna have a little activity, you know, stand up silently if you feel scared, stand up, you know, if you feel this and that.
If you feel angry.
But
KALW News reported on this, and we'll hopefully play some sound later in the show. And everyone in the room
stood up and it, you know, made noise because we just couldn't help it. You know, a lot of people in the audience, we lived there, you know, our whole lives and experience incident after incident, as Antonia mentioned, and we just don't see it getting better, you know. And not even that, but there's no transparency in information, and Chevron doesn't try to go out of its way to inform us, you know. And we've asked before, it wasn't the first time, like 3 years ago I asked one of the representatives that, you know, she should send a letter to every resident that lives a certain radius, a list of, you know, chemicals or toxins that are released and short-term, long-term effects of that, you know. And she just acted like she was jotting something down, and you know, of course she never got back at me, you know. And 3 years later now, you know, we're demanding the same thing, and they couldn't give it to us in the meeting.
David, what has your experience been like in reporting on Chevron? Are you able to interact with the officials? Are they giving you information about the toxics that are in the air?
No, not too much. I've been able to talk to a couple of the people at the plant who are not spokespeople, but who really do work there. But that came after several days. At first, you know, the first evening, I think it took me probably about over an hour to get anybody on the phone, and I was calling pretty much everyone I knew. That said, I'm not that surprised about that from any company that just went through a big disaster like that. Mm-hmm. The first few hours are always going to be kind of chaotic. They're definitely trying to, you know, put out information on a day-to-day basis, and yet at the same time control the flow of information. They don't want to say too much at any given time, but at the same point they don't want to clam up completely because they know that the community wouldn't stand for that.
That's David Baker. He's a staff writer with the San Francisco Chronicle. He and his colleagues wrote a lengthy piece about Chevron's tense relationship with Richmond in yesterday's Chronicle. It's a great read. They report that Chevron's global profits have soared, hitting $26.9 billion last year. And according to David's piece, city officials understand the refinery's importance, but they've spent much of the last decade wrestling with Chevron over the plant's taxes. The city officials say that the company is nickel and diming Richmond, and we'll talk about that on today's show. We're also joined by Tanya Polito. She's an activist and a Richmond resident. She runs the Berryland Community Garden in Richmond, and she's been involved in a number of campaigns, including one against the local Chevron refinery. And Antonia Juhas is author of The Tyranny of Oil, The World's Most Powerful Industry and What We Must Do to Stop It. She is the editor and lead author of three alternative annual reports for Chevron, The True Cost of Chevron. And we'd love to hear from you. If you live near Chevron or an oil refinery, what is your relationship like with these massive corporations? What was your reaction when you heard about the fire? If you are in the area, what was it like? What did it smell like? What do you think about the relationship between Chevron and the community? And where do you think it should go from here? What's really fascinating is you'll read in David's piece and other pieces, a lot of people are obviously concerned about this, angry about this, but they feel that if Chevron goes away, what would happen to the city of Richmond? And we'll be talking about that. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. What about that question, David? You have some really great quotes in your piece about people saying, I'm not happy with Chevron, but if they leave, what happens to our city?
There was a woman who spoke at that community meeting last Tuesday and was quoted in a couple of the reports from the meeting because she summed it up in such a pithy way. She said, without the refinery, we'd be Vallejo. And I think that's sort of, that's the fear in people's the backs of people's minds. You know, everyone that we spoke to for the story was very coldly realistic about it. They don't like having this thing next door in terms of, you know, nobody likes having to shelter in place. Nobody likes having, you know, the possibility that there could be a fire releasing toxins just upwind from your house. And, you know, all of Richmond is downwind from the refinery. Whenever there's a problem, they're going to be the ones bearing the brunt. And yet, at the same time, you know, this is a city that used to have a big, thriving industrial base decades ago. And bit by bit, that base just sort of disintegrated and went away. All the shipyards that they had in World War II closed down, all four of them. They had the Ford plant that closed down. Thankfully, now SunPower's moved into that thing. But, you know, bit by bit, that industrial base of the city just fell apart. And now they've got the refinery, which is, you know, in some ways a kind of frightening neighbor. And yet they know that without that, their tax base just shrivels up. And you talk to people, just pull people randomly off the street, and they know that themselves. It's I think, something, a calculation everybody makes in the back of their heads. That doesn't mean, however, that they don't want this thing to run as cleanly as possible, and there's the trick.
Antonia, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, basically, there's no such thing as a clean, safe, or healthy oil refinery. It's not possible to have one. But you can most certainly have a cleaner, safer, healthier, more transparent refinery than the one that Chevron is running in Richmond. And we have excellent regulations in place that, you know, one simple step could be actually enforcing the laws that we have on the books. Not a very radical idea, but certainly a, you know, reasonable one. We need more capacity for our regulators. We need more oversight from our regulators, and we need to implement the laws that we have. We also need much stricter community direct oversight and worker oversight. So a really great example was following the Exxon Valdez disaster in Alaska, a community worker company oversight board was created. And community activists speak very highly of this board. It has direct, meaningful oversight, and the community members and the workers are, in fact, very involved in it. So much so that in the wake of the BP oil spill, Gulf Coast residents have been seeking for 2 years to get the same type of board put into place there to to oversee their offshore operations. The very same model can and should be put into place for refineries. We have a very educated community here that spent 100 years dealing with this refinery. They have very, very important capacity and ideas. But in addition, there has been this constant pull in the community, which is this is an employer, this is a tax or a somewhat limited employer. As you said in the statistics, only 7% of the workers actually live in Richmond. But, you know, there is certainly money that's coming in from the refinery. But there's a petition that's going around now that is reflecting a drive that's been in place for decades in Richmond. And that petition, one place you can find it is on the website of Asian Pacific Environmental Network. But it's a petition that's being launched by a group of community groups. And they call for a transition of this refinery towards solar and green energy provision. And that they're green. This is an area of green jobs, a great green jobs training, basically create more capacity for green jobs and transition this refinery to something else. And then just to say really quickly, because I know we've got a lot of calls, the first complaint might be gas. We need the gasoline from the refinery. We do utilize the gasoline from this refinery, but there's just two really important facts to throw out there. There has not been an impact on an immediate impact on supply of gasoline. The reason why gas prices went up, and we can talk about this more, isn't because there was suddenly a lack of gasoline supply. It was because oil companies took advantage of our concern and raised gas prices, period. In May of this year, the last time federal figures were available in the state of California, we had nearly twice as much gasoline as we did in May of last year in stocks, just being held. The state of California is the 48th consumer of energy in the country. We are extremely energy efficient. We are not huge energy consumers. In the state of California, we are increasingly exporting out our oil and our gasoline that we're providing because we produce a lot of it. We certainly need gasoline and we'll need it for some time, but we're not nearly as strapped to this refinery in the industry as the industry would like us to think.
We're 48?
48.
Wow. All right. Well, I want to take a call, and I want you to elaborate on that. Let's hear from Harvey in Berkeley before we go to break. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Rosen. Thank you for the show and your wonderful guests. Thanks for the show. I'd like to make three short points. First of all, the refinery used to be on the outskirts of town when it was built, but the population's filled in around it, so it's time to close the plant. That's straight out. The oil companies have been offshoring their refineries to Brazil and other countries, so they don't mind. That's what they've been doing anyways. And the woman talked about the drill on Wednesday. Well, what if the disaster happens on the drill day and everybody thinks, oh, that's just a drill? And one last thing, Prop 65 says the chemicals known to the state to cause cancer, birth defects, and other reproductive harm are found in gasoline, crude oil, and then many other petroleum products, their vapors, or their use. So it gives us cancer. That's it. They're privatizing the profit and socializing the losses, and that's us getting cancer. Let's get solar.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Harvey. And we're going to take a quick break. We have full lines, and when we come back, we'll take more calls. And I want to talk to Antonia about that number 48. I haven't heard that before. And we'd love to hear from you. We're talking today about what happened last Monday, the fire at the Chevron Richmond refinery. If you have any questions about it, comments, what do we need to know about Chevron and their history? If you live in the area or live near an oil refinery, what is your relationship like with the corporation? We're talking about community oversight. We're talking about regulation. We'll talk more about that also. Why isn't this being enforced? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. You're listening to Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Team sends out their email newsletter and tells folks what's coming up on the show and gives you resources to let you learn more and get involved. Subscribe today so you'll know what's coming up and can submit your questions and comments before the show goes on the air. It's free and easy to sign up. Just click the email newsletter link at yourcallradio.org. yourcallradio.org.
is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about what we can learn from states that have passed or are working to pass universal health care. We'll talk about what's happening in Vermont and also New Mexico, where they're hoping to pass universal health care. That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we're talking about Chevron. A new report just came out over the weekend from the U.S. Chemical Safety Board, and they say that last Monday's fire was one of the worst refinery accidents in recent years. So we're talking about what exactly happened, what is the relationship like with the community and Chevron, if you live near an oil refinery, what's your experience been like, and what do we need to know about an oil giant like Chevron, posting $26.9 billion in profits last year? The toll-free number, 866-798-8255. We'll have a line open in just a couple minutes. You can also post to yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We're joined today by Antonia Juhas, author of The Tyranny of Oil. She is editor and lead author of three alternative annual reports for Chevron, The True Cost of Chevron. A number of people from around the world were in town, what was that, 3 or 4 months ago?
May.
Talking about how Chevron is affecting them in places, name it, Brazil, Nigeria, so many different countries.
All over the world, yeah.
David Baker is a staff writer with the San Francisco Chronicle. Check out the piece he wrote with his colleagues yesterday about the company's tense relationship with Richmond in yesterday's Chronicle. And Tanya Polito is an activist and a Richmond resident. She has launched a number of campaigns, including one against Chevron. And let's take a couple of calls and then we'll get responses. Let's hear from Jane in Corte Madera. Hi, Jane.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We got, let me just clear my throat just a minute. We got none of the smoke from the fire over here. Fortunately, the winds were with us, and it went high enough so that it could be dispersed by the movement of air higher up. I call the oil companies big gas. There are so many questions that I have. How does a gas station know to raise its price 15 minutes after the explosion? Who controls the increase in prices at gas stations? Does Chevron control all of it, or how does that work? Other refineries, it has been reported, can more than cover the loss from Chevron. They didn't have to raise gasoline prices one penny. But these people take advantage of any kind of a disaster and soak the public. One gas station manager or owner in Marin County smiled when he was interviewed, and he said, a lot of my customers seem to be complaining, so I can just keep the prices where. To whom do we complain? How do we deal with this? And now, because there's a glut of gasoline in this country, and yet the president has okayed drilling off the Alaska coastline again, there's something scandalous about the oil people, BP and Chevron and the rest of these folks. And we are being taken to the laundry on this. And we need to have answers and to find out why the people near the refinery in Richmond, people living there, have suffered for years. Increase in asthma, increase in malignancies. Nobody cared about them until this happened, and all of a sudden everybody's concerned about how the residents close to the refineries are, how are they? Nobody cared about them before this happened. Somebody has got to tell us the truth. Is there anybody on your show that can speak to some of these subjects?
Well, thank you so much, Jane. And so many of these issues did come up during the community meetings. In fact, you had a lot of people say, you know what, we're black, we're brown, nobody cares about us. And we'll play a couple clips from the meeting, possibly during the show. Antonia, what about the question about prices? Because it was just a day after this happened, most headlines led with the price of gas.
Yeah, absolutely. And the prices did go up immediately. So the first thing to say is this isn't your local gas station. They're not the ones manipulating the price. The gas stations, unless they're independent, are told by the oil company that sells them the gas how much to sell the gasoline for. They literally make 1, 2, maybe 3 cents profit. That's it. They make their money from the stuff that you buy inside the store. They don't make their money from the selling of gasoline. The oil company makes a lot of money off of the sale of gasoline. And basically, this is a very common phenomena. It's referred to as rockets and feathers in the industry. If there's any kind of disturbance that the public knows about that could potentially affect supply, the price of gasoline immediately rockets up. Goes up right away. We all see it happen. But when that thing is dealt with, whatever it might be, the price slowly but surely feathers back down. So why didn't it go back down immediately if it can go up immediately? That's because the companies, I'm not going to say the word collude because that would be against the law, but they conspire and consort and look at each other's prices and know that they can raise them, and they raise them as high as is necessary to take advantage of as much as they can to take advantage of the public's perception that it's acceptable. And they don't need to literally sit in a room together and smoke a cigar and talk about prices, because all they have to do is walk out on the street and see what the other guy's selling it for, and they can all basically stay within the same range, and they do.
Let me jump in on that. I got to disagree with Antonio on some of it. Some of it actually is the local gas station. I mean, if you're talking about a franchisee or a true independent, it's actually illegal for the oil companies to literally tell them what they can charge. They can do that solely for the stations that they own completely, where they have like one manager handling a bunch of them. They can force the stations that are franchisees with them to move their prices around by changing how much the oil company charges them for wholesale gas. But that's going to hit in like a day or two after something like this. When you see somebody like going out and changing prices overnight, that probably is the local gas station guy, because he knows there's going to be a big jump coming up and he's going to try to get ahead of it. The other culprit that you got to point out also in this is the traders. Mm-hmm. The wholesale market for gasoline, the spot market, where companies buy up supplies for like a day in advance, a couple days in advance, that's where we saw the initial gigantic jump. And as soon as you have that, if it lasts more than like a day or two, that jump, that automatically goes into the retail price. So it's not just oil companies out there. There are actually other players that are involved.
Can I say, I absolutely agree with David. I would disagree on some points on the edges, but we don't need to go into it. The oil companies also engage in futures trading, both in oil and in gasoline. So you're kind of talking about a circle of, you know, similar players. And yes, the futures price goes up. The futures price isn't going up, again, because of an actual shift in supply. The futures price is going up because they're gambling on the fact that they know that the gas price is going to go up, and the gas price is going to go up because the public's being manipulated. I mean, you know, basically what we're all agreeing to is this isn't an issue of actual supply and demand. And people can complain. They can complain to the Federal Trade Commission.
Well, I think you know, to answer the caller's primary question, what can we do? You can buy a Volt. Buy a leaf, you know, those options are
well,
out there.
And they're a lot, real. You know, David, a lot of people do wonder, does it matter where they buy their gas?
Well, I mean, you know, in terms of the quality of the gas, no, it doesn't matter, because they're all buying from the same sources and just taking it off to different stations. The only thing that's different between, you know, a Chevron gas and Shell gas is basically the detergents that the companies put in there. You know, you can buy from your local, if you get to know them and you know that they own the place and you feel better about buying from a locally owned station, amen, go ahead and do it. With the way the big oil companies run their networks, you know, some of these stations are owned directly by the companies, some of them are owned by franchisees. Unless you go up and ask, you're not really going to know.
And just to Jane's second part of her question, Tanya, what are your thoughts about the community? She says that, you know, no one really cares about the community until something like this happens, yet you have to deal with it on a daily basis. And we actually have a couple of emails about this. We have one question from Armand. He says, I'm curious about how many toxins are being released on a daily basis when there's not a fire or an accident.
Yeah, I mean, there's the refinery flares, you know, here and there, and they're not very transparent with the information. It basically gets down to that. I mean, the first times I ever heard about the refinery and their business was when I met Antonia and I read her reports, and I was just shocked by all the information she was putting out there. And before then, you know, I never received a call. You know, even in the high schools, I went to Richmond High, and you know, our mascot's an oil funnel, and it's like,
what?
Yeah, exactly. We're the Richmond Oilers. And, you know, even at the local schools, the information isn't transparent and people don't know about it.
So wait, your mascot is an oil
funnel.
Who came up with this idea?
A long time ago. I guess I heard the refinery gave a lot of money to, because the school got rebuilt. And I heard back before the school got rebuilt, it had like windows and everything. And now the second time it got rebuilt, like it doesn't have any windows, like in the main building, like all the classrooms. Yeah, I went there. It was pretty bad. Like they don't have any windows or anything. And the oil funnels are mascot. And
wait, why don't you have windows?
Because supposedly it was for us to focus more, I heard. I heard the same person who designed Richmond High was the same person who designed San Quentin. So, yeah, this was from, we had this tour by this activist who's lived in Richmond his whole life, and he was giving us a tour of the city and telling us, like, political history of everything. And, you know, that was some of the information he shared when we got to Richmond High.
You know, if it makes you feel any better, I used to work in a newsroom that had literally no windows because the managers who were running the company when they built the newsroom decided that we would focus better. And
exactly,
would not
yeah.
stare out the window at the sky.
No.
So, yeah.
I mean, if I could just jump in, this is Antonia. You know, to the caller's question, just as you say, basically, you know, this issue's already falling off the news coverage. Mm-hmm. Thank you to Rose for continuing in the press and for David for reporting it in the Chronicle, but it's basically already off the television. And the local communities are going to continue to have to do the struggle every day. And of course, the struggle isn't just about them. It's obviously about the entire Bay Area's health, because they're the ones who are keeping the refinery in check every day. And the thing to do to make sure that this struggle continues and this refinery gets safer is to support those local groups. So groups like Communities for a Better Environment, Asian Pacific Environmental Network, West County Toxics Coalition, Ella Baker Center, Urban Tith, where Tanya works. If you support these groups day in and day out, they can do the work for you, which is to hold this refinery in check.
Well, thank you for the call, Carol. Today we're speaking with Antonia Juhas, author of The Tyranny of Oil. Tanya Polito is an activist and a Richmond resident who's about to go to UC Berkeley. She just said she went to Richmond High, where the mascot was an oil funnel. David Baker is a staff writer at the San Francisco Chronicle. And we have just over 10 minutes left. You can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'll go through a couple of calls so we can get a few free lines. Let's hear from Carol in Santa Cruz. Hi, Carol.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, I just wanted to say that I lived in that area in El Cerrito for 18 years from 1980 to 98 before I moved to Santa Cruz. And I lived next door to one of the vice presidents of Chevron, who was, as far as I remember, a huge environmentalist at the time. And he was always trying to figure out what he could do to help the environment. So I would say, you know, keep up with all the good groups and appeal to people's sense of right. And the fact is, you know, people had worse, higher levels of breast cancer in our area. And I remember that from, you know, when I moved in 98. So,
and Carol, let me ask you, when you moved, did you notice a major difference in the air quality?
Actually, I don't know that I noticed it, because I lived where next door to the vice president. He didn't live close to the refinery. He lived pretty much in Wildcat Canyon, up over the hill, over the Arlington, which is pretty far away from getting any fumes. I never smelt any fumes.
Okay.
So, but I do know that there was a higher incidence of breast cancer in that area. I distinctly remember being told that and looking at some statistics. I do know that, you know, most of the people do care. I think it all comes back to a lot of good organizations and for the public to get smarter and be educated to support campaign finance reform, so we don't have a commingling so much of the, you know, corporate interest and government, you know, and the stock, well, all the people, the board of directors and blah, 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 looking at just that bottom line, but really thinking what's best for the community.
Well, thank you for calling in. Thanks, Carol. Let's go next to Natalie in Richmond. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, this is Sarah. First, you know, I really respect that the refinery was there first and that the community did grow up around it, and that, you know, when you live next door to a refinery like an Air Force base, you're going to be exposed to that stuff. But I also know that as we transition into a new era, you know, things change, and I think the refinery itself would want to do what's right for the community. If you look at what the positive outcome of this is, that people are thinking outside of the box a little more. For example, what if the refinery changed its production there, and also the real, you know, maybe they wouldn't be making as much money, but the taxes would be coming from the real estate because it's an amazing location. Mm-hmm. It's got great bay views. The reason why people don't want to live around there is because of the refinery. So they, you know, the whole, there could be a whole new era of that location in Richmond, a whole new history of coming out of this toxicity and into a more, how should I say, environmentally positive change. And I think Richmond could spearhead that. And I think the refinery would probably, if we could get some good leadership behind it, come up with some new ideas. So it's a good opportunity, is how I look at it.
Thank you for calling in. Do you want to respond, Tanya?
Yeah. I want to respond because, you know, there has been, like, a lack of community engagement at big numbers, right? Even when I was campaigning and we held the march, you know, there wasn't that many Richmond residents at the march. And I think a major problem that I learned from that experience was, you know, although we hear this and that from the news, like, people, once they saw the fire, they were just thinking money signs in their head. Like, oh, I'm going to get money from Chevron. You know, I received money from Chevron when I turned 18 for an explosion that happened in the past when I was younger. And, you know, that's kind of like the thing that people think about, not so much like how to hold it accountable. Well, at least, you know, of course, there's going to be a variation of people, you know, but at least for the most part, right, like, instead of seeing a whole bunch of people rallying to have a community meeting where we have breakout discussions and talk about problems and solutions and how to move forward, you see tons of people flocking, you know, the claims center where they're holding, like, claims and stuff. And then the problem with the claims is, like, once people sign that contract and accept the check, they're then limited to the actual actions that they can take forward or the things that they can say. And this goes across the city with nonprofits, organizations, churches, individuals. You know, over and over and over again, people will close the door at me because they said they couldn't be affiliated with someone who was doing work against the refinery or trying to hold them accountable, because then they would lose their funding. So I think that's why we don't see all these leaders in Richmond, because there's a lot of nonprofits, there's a lot of community leaders, and I think the reason why we don't see them standing up and why we didn't see a lot of these groups at Town Hall is because they're afraid they might lose their money that they give.
So you've actually spoken to people who work for nonprofits
yeah.
who say, I can't work with you because I've received money from Chevron.
Yep. Yes.
David, have you done reporting on that?
No, I haven't. That's the first I heard that one.
Oh, yeah, it's very common. I mean, it's not that Chevron requires them to sign something that says that they can't, but rather they're very concerned that the constant sort of small checks that they get from Chevron will be stopped if they engage in any sort of
exactly.
critique of the company.
And then because money is so low right now for nonprofits and everything, like anything, they'll take a lot. Some people will take anything and, you know, rather take that $1,000 check than fight for a $5,000, even $10,000 check. And because it's like the needs in Richmond are so great and people immediate needs aren't being met, you know, that they're willing to take whatever money they're willing to give.
David, do we know the actual economic contribution that Chevron makes to the community?
I wish I pulled that up beforehand. I think their total was something like $10 million over the last 3 years. Might have been a little higher than that. They spread it out over a number of groups, and they tend to concentrate in a lot of, like, after-school education mm-hmm. programs and job training things. But I think it's about $10 million or a little
so,
more.
So, wait, we're talking about a corporation. We're talking $26.9 billion in global profits last year. And you're saying they give maybe $4 million a year to the community?
Something like that, yeah.
How does mm-hmm. that differ from other corporations? I mean, it sounds so incredibly low.
Also, you know, think of it from their perspective in terms of the company. I mean, Chevron is based in San Ramon, is
right.
based here in the Bay Area.
Right.
And yet, at the same time, they are global in a way that few companies are, few companies outside the oil industry. I mean, they operate refineries all over the world. They operate oil fields all over the world. So, you know, to us, Richmond is a big deal. and always will be. Whereas to them, I think it's harder for them to see it that way.
Well, also, I mean, it's just important to put those numbers into context. You know, Richmond is a company town, and Chevron's been trying for many years to maintain it as a company town. But there's been a huge rebellion against that at the electoral level. So Chevron's actually had to increase the amount of money that it gives to community groups to try to gain greater support within the community, because after its long record of abuses in the community, in 2006, Chevron's handpicked mayoral candidates were rejected, and Green Party Mayor McLaughlin was elected very much against the movement of Chevron, and Chevron has continued for years to try and unseat her. Also, a city council that is critical of Chevron and its operations is now in the majority, and Chevron's working very hard to try and change that tide. But on the electoral side, there's been a just very successful rebellion against this company. But if you look at the money that Chevron does or does not give to the state, I mean, one of the statistics we didn't give was that the Richmond Refinery is the single largest emitter of greenhouse gases in the entire state of California. Chevron is also the largest producer of oil in the state, but we are the only state in the nation that doesn't charge a tax on that oil when it's removed from the ground. This could be billions of dollars that could go in annually into California's coffers. And the main reason why we don't have that tax is because of Chevron. They've successfully blocked it for years. Any oil company that operates in California will say, you know, Chevron's really the leader when it comes to what happens politically in the state. And, you know, the money that they hand out at the community level is one of the ways that they try and, you know, win good favor in spite of many of the harms that they're doing.
The voters went against that oil tax proposition.
Yeah. And that's because the oil sector led by Chevron spent 2-1 when the initiative was first presented. It had broad support in the public. By the end of a very aggressive campaign that said basically gas will cost more if this happens, people voted against it. And again, it's a facetious argument.
And David, do they explore in California?
Yeah, they do. You know, we, in terms of the taxes, we do tax oil in a different way than most states do. We tax it basically as a kind of property underground. And they've been exploring for oil in their own oil fields around the state for over 100 years. I mean, they started down in the Santa Clarita area. I think it's 130 years ago now. So they're still at it around the state. They're still trying to figure out how to squeeze more oil out of the fields that they've owned for a long, long time. But yeah, in terms of the taxation, it keeps coming up. I'm sure it will keep coming up. Every time they've been able to kill it by saying, well, it'll raise your gas prices, even though, you know, when I talk to economists about it and when I've reported on it, pretty much everyone says, well, if it raises your prices at all, it'd be like a penny or two, and that's doubtful. Mm-hmm. So,
and also, we have just a couple more minutes. How often is this refinery inspected?
That's an interesting question I don't know the answer to. That's one of the things that we have to figure out. I mean, there are different government agencies that are responsible for looking at it for different reasons. But no, we do not. I don't know yet, and I don't think anyone in my paper knows yet just how often it is supposed to be inspected and how often it is.
Antonia, why don't we have this information?
One of the reasons why is that there's just this ridiculous patchwork of state, local, federal oversight that is really the companies take advantage of. The lack of funding for regulatory oversight. There are consequences when we don't have money for regulation. It means that we don't have anyone to actually enforce them. And we don't have enough people. We don't have enough capacity to trace what they're doing. And there is just this sort of confusion, I think, on the popular level of who should be doing what when, which makes it more difficult to track who's actually doing what.
I mean, it's kind of incredible considering it has such an effect on the community, the environment, and health. And we were receiving so many emails from listeners like Eleanor, who says the fire affected not just Richmond. I live in El Cerrito and have had a breathing, eye, and dizziness symptom ever since, and have along with my neighbors. We're interested in anything, knowing about what we should do about this medically, as well as the larger political issues you're talking about. I had my windows open that night because it was hot. Maya in Richmond says, I live in Richmond in a neighborhood that did not have the emergency sirens activated, yet I have been sick since Monday. I fail to understand how the air was within normal standards given the black smoke and the smell. I have heard that the 23 chemicals that are tested for do not adequately represent the pollutants typically released in an accident like this. Can someone please address this?
Well, you know, even... Put it this way, even if you believe the county that all the toxins were within tolerable levels, this is still a black cloud of smoke. Breathing smoke is harmful. It is under any circumstances. If you're standing next to a fireplace and you suck in a bunch of that, it's going to be bad for you. So, I mean, there is a real, even if the toxins are at tolerable levels, there is a real problem with breathing this stuff if you're underneath that cloud. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that people are calling in from farther away. I mean, this cloud drifted over much of Contra Costa County. That's just the way the winds go.
Well, and it was also at least 160,000 people live in the areas that receive the shelter-in-place warning, which means that, you know, there's concern over at least that many number of people's health. You can get claims from Chevron. This is important. They will pay medical expenses. If you get that claim, you're signing away your right to sue them. So that's a decision you need to make. But you can get a claim, and it's certainly worth making sure that you get Chevron to reimburse you. I also just wanted to say I have a op-ed that will appear on this issue tomorrow in tomorrow's Los Angeles Times, and people can look for that and more information.
All right, thank you. And final thoughts from you, Tanya, 30 seconds. Where does this go from here?
Where does it go from here? I know that a lot of people are angry right now in Richmond. And, you know, I've had numerous people come up to me and vent. And I think that for us who have been organizing, you know, making a stronger collaboration between all of us and giving those angry people the tools and resources to actually move to the next level will be an important issue for us to address.
That is Tanya Polito, an activist and a Richmond resident who's about to enter UC Berkeley. Congratulations, Tanya.
Thank you.
David Baker is a staff writer with The Chronicle. You can find his piece about Chevron's tense relationship with the community at yourcallradio.org. And Antonia Yuhas is author of The Tyranny of Oil and editor and lead author of the 3 annual reports for Chevron, The True Cost of Chevron. Thank you, Antonia.
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Tanya,
you.
And thanks, David. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
And thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. We learn from states that have passed or are working to pass universal health care. Yeah. On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about single payer. Earlier this year, Senate Bill 810, which would have paved the way for universal health care coverage in California, failed to pass. So how would the plan actually work? Join us at 10 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Do you support health care for all? What will it take to get there? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.
Tonight for City Visions, as Joseph Pache explores the November ballot initiative to drain the Hetch Hetchy Reservoir and restore the Hetch Hetchy Valley to its former scenic beauty. But with the Hetch Hetchy as the major source of water for San Francisco and surrounding communities, if we drain it, just where will our water supply come from? And what are the other implications? Tune in tonight at 7 as we discuss this initiative on City Visions, here at 91.7 FM and at KALW.org.
This is KALW San Francisco. Stay tuned. The BBC's World Have Your Say is next. The time is 11 o'clock.
This is the BBC. Welcome to World Have Your Say. I'm Ben James, and two cities, Cairo and Rio, are at the centre of your conversations.
We're Brazilians. We're gonna deliver. I think it's going to be a fantastic time to all the people that's going to be there. I'm sorry, I can't talk properly now because I'm so overwhelmed.
After watching London 2012, would you want your city to host the Olympic Games? Whether people in Rio like it or not, the event is heading there in 4 years from now. Do the last couple of weeks make you more or less keen to see the Games on your doorstep one day? Post on facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay to take part, wherever you are. Also, Field Marshal Tantawi leaves his post at the head of Egypt's military. Does it complete the revolution, as some might have it, or has it changed nothing? We're also on Twitter. The hashtag is WHYS.